This is just an essential element of authoritarianism, where you just create a fantasy world that your believers cultishly follow, and you enforce those beliefs by punishing those who contradict the party line. I mean, you know, it's Orwellian. It's Orwell.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and because I am very much not a lawyer, I've asked my good friend George Conway from the Society for the Rule of Law to explain all the illegal news to me and to you. George, how you doing, buddy?
Good, I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, although I've got a couple topics here that are a little wonky for me, so I'm excited to have you explain them. I'm nervous about it, though. But let's start with one that I do understand pretty clearly. January 6th, the day that lives in infamy. When I say it now, you know that I don't mean the future January or just the most recent January. But here's what happened. Two D.C. federal prosecutors were put on administrative leave hours after filing a sentencing memo against a January 6th defendant, Tyler Taranto. Taranto was among the January 6th defendants pardoned by Trump, but he also faced separate charges from an arrest near President Obama's house in 2023. In the sentencing memo, Taranto was said to have participated in the riot at the Capitol. The memo also said that after the riot, Taranto returned to his home in Washington, where he promoted conspiracy theories about the events of January 6th, 2021. So those are pretty clear-cut factual statements. But a few hours after the prosecutors filed that sentencing memorandum, they were put on leave. And it's been reported that the move was initiated by the White House. So as a reminder to folks, earlier this year, dozens of prosecutors were fired for participating not in January 6th, but in the January 6th prosecutions. So if you were there at the DOJ, you prosecuted the people who stormed the Capitol. Many of them were let go. So now you've got a couple of these guys saying, hey, this person, he promoted conspiracy theories about January 6th, and now they have been put on leave, apparently at the behest of the White House. That is wild. So this is yet another breach of the longstanding norms around the independence of DOJ, which is just, I mean, we used to have an independent DOJ, and God, I got to tell you, George, just as a side, I was rewatching for reasons that I will talk about some other time, the Deal Book Summit that I did with Jason Miller and
somebody,
and,
yes.
And your ex-wife as well, but and Kevin McCarthy. And it was in it. Jason Miller keeps talking about the weaponized Department of Justice under Joe Biden. And, you know, they really were like hard on this. And he gets asked by Maggie Haberman, will Trump pardon the January 6th, the people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th? And he says, well, you know, President Trump, or she's also asking, will he seek retribution? As he says he is. And Jason Miller's like, well, his only retribution is going to be his success, Maggie. And we're going to look at the January 6th people on a case-by-case basis. I mean, just watching that made my head explode. Coming to present day, where not only has Trump pardoned everybody who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, but also is kicking people out of the Department of Justice just because they worked on those cases. Like, talk about weaponizing the Justice Department and the extent to which he has told Pam Bondi who to prosecute. I mean, we do not express often enough just how completely insane this is and how far it's gotten in such a short period of time. It's just, and it's also an example of them trying to whitewash January 6th, right? Like, he's still there talking about the election being rigged and stolen, as though we all have to just accept that premise. So what do you make of this putting on leave these people who were prosecuting this January 6th person for a different crime?
I don't really have that much to add to what you just said. I think you articulated it perfectly. I mean, the world, black is white is black, up is down is up, in is out. I mean, everything is the opposite of what it truly is. Everything is a lie. Everything has to adhere to the fantasy in the mind of Donald Trump, or else if you do that, you're out. And, you know, I mean, and then Jason Miller, I mean, you know, he just says shit, right? I mean, he knew exactly what Trump would do, what Trump wants to do. We knew it. at the time, what Trump was going to do and what he wants to do, because we were listening to him.
Yeah.
We were listening to him, and we had watched and we had extrapolated from everything he had done in his public life that was so narcissistic and sociopathic and just bonkers. We know what he's going to do. He tells us what he's going to do. And a lot of the times he will do it. And particularly when it is something that really goes to the core of him, it goes to his ego. It goes to his, you know, it goes to whether he's a criminal. So of course he's going to rewrite history so that he didn't commit crimes and the people who were working for him didn't commit crimes, even though they were all criminals, to the point where, again, I mean, we were listening to Donald Trump for years. It was like, there was a lot of love. There was a lot of love on Capitol Hill that day. Remember him saying that?
Yeah.
It was love, right? It was love.
It's a day of love.
It's just like, I mean,
you know, people died.
These prosecutors, right? People were severely injured. And we saw the video. We watched it that day. We watched an absolute just disbelief where people were committing acts of violence on police officers at the Capitol. I'm like, a mob riot. And these prosecutors are going to lose their jobs, probably, because all they did in this brief that was objectionable to the White House was they referred to January 6th as a mob riot. Okay?
After the riot.
Then it wasn't even insurrection, right? It was actually an insurrection. It was actually an attempt to overthrow the Constitution. It was a lot of different things. But even if you don't accept that proposition, that it was an insurrection or an attempt to overthrow the constitutional order or an attempt to suppress democracy or an attempt to overturn an election, it was a mob riot. It was nothing if not a mob riot. That is the definition of a mob riot.
Yes.
Instead, in Trump world, I'm getting all worked up. You got me worked up.
Sorry.
It's, you know, in Trump world, a mob riot is a bunch of people in frog costumes or whatnot, singing at ICE officers and saying, fuck ICE.
Okay. People weren't even that intense, like at the No Kings thing. They were like wearing a frog and unicorn costumes and they were singing like Battle Hymn of the Republic, waving American flags.
Yes. Yeah. So again, I mean, and this is just an essential element of authoritarianism, where you just create a fantasy world that your believers cultishly follow, and you enforce those beliefs by punishing those who contradict the party line. I mean, you know, it's Orwellian. It's Orwell. It's everything you wouldn't expect an American government and a government of free people to be.
Okay, time for a quick break from one of our sponsors. It's Mudwater. As the chilly days of fall roll in and the holiday rush begins, it's easy to forget about taking care of yourself. Enter Mudwater, a soothing yet energizing coffee alternative that helps you stay sharp and balanced through the busiest time of the year. Mudwater gives you a natural boost without the crash or coffee jitters. And I drink a lot of coffee and get a lot of coffee jitters. Mudwater is like my holiday self-care ritual in a cup. Packed with antioxidants and wellness benefits that nourish your body while keeping you centered and clear-headed through the chaos of the season. Got to be clear-headed, guys. There's a lot of legal jargon to get through. And I love being antioxidized. And I don't love the caffeine jitters. As you can see, I'm amped up enough as it is. So that makes Mudwater perfect for me. So as you prepare for the holidays, it makes a perfect stocking stuffer for anyone in need of a little extra self-care. And you know what? Everyone deserves a little self-care. Give it to them. Whether you're powering through gift wrapping, decking the halls, or simply enjoying a quiet moment to yourself, Mudwater is the ultimate way to bring balance and calm to your fall and holiday routine. Every single ingredient in Mudwater's products are 100% USDA certified, organic, non-GMO, gluten-free, vegan, and kosher. There's also zero sugar and no sweeteners added, making it a clean and wholesome choice for your wellness journey. Using Mudwater is as easy as cozying up on a crisp fall afternoon, which is what we have today. Head to mudwater.com and grab your starter kit For a limited time, our listeners get up to 43% off your entire order, free shipping, and a free rechargeable frother at mudwtr.com/askgeorge. That's 43% off your order at mudwtr.com/askgeorge. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. This fall, nourish your body and mind with Mudwater, a perfect addition to your self-care routine as the weather cools and the days get shorter. Okay, let's move on to the National Guard, because as we have talked about previously, Illinois and the city of Chicago sued to stop Trump from deploying the National Guard into Chicago. The federal district court granted Illinois' request for a temporary restraining order, pausing the deployment of the National Guard in Illinois. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals upheld that decision. Okay. So immediately after, Trump petitioned the Supreme Court to overturn the lower court's decision. And last week, the Supreme Court asked both parties to file supplemental briefs on the question of whether the term regular forces, and if you're listening to this, I'm doing my air quotes because that's it, regular forces, because this is important to this wonky, difficult subject, whether the term regular forces refers to the regular forces of the United States military. And that question is important because by law, the president is allowed to deploy the Guard without state permission if the president is, and again, I'm quoting, unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. So the question is whether regular forces just means the military or whether it also includes federal officers like ICE or federal law enforcement, which is the justification. Like, that's why they're sending the National Guard in, because they say, well, somebody's got to be there to protect ICE against the protesters or whatever. So right. What do you think? Is it a good sign or a bad sign that the Supreme Court asked for this supplemental briefing?
I think it's a good sign, because I think it really gets to the heart of the issue. Obviously, rebellion, there was no rebellion. There was no insurrection. I don't think any court could reasonably say those were existing. So therefore, you end up with the only other possible prong that the government can use, which is 10 U.S.C. 12406(3), which you quoted. It's the one that says when the president, without, you know, with the use of the regular forces, cannot enforce the law. And the government has been assuming, its order assumes that, well, if ICE can't enforce the law, then therefore we can call in the National Guard. But the problem is exactly what this order raises. And this order was prompted by an excellent amicus brief written by a professor at Georgetown Law School named Marty Lederman, who I had the privilege of going to law school with. And he basically goes through the entire history of these militia provisions. And it's pretty clear that regular forces refers to regular military forces, regular army forces, for example. You know, you can't use the military as a substitute for ICE if ICE can't do its job. And what's great about this argument is you don't have to get into the facts, right? The problem with the litigation thus far is that some judges are basically saying, well, we can't second guess the president of the United States on whether or not ICE is able to do its job. That's something we can't do that. We have to defer to the president. The president says ICE is being impeded. Who are we, mere judges, to say that? But here you don't get to that point. Because if you accept this premise that the regular forces means armed forces, there's basically no way out for the administration. And even the most administration sympathetic justices are going to have a difficult time ruling in the government's favor. So I think it's a very, very good development. And I think it's also good because it shows that the court is saying, well, we get to say what the law is here. Now let me qualify everything I've just said. We don't know the backstory behind this order. We don't know which of the justices is doing it and for what reason. I mean, if it's Roberts or if it's one of the justices who you think could go either way, that's great. If it's just a shot in the dark, it requires obviously a vote, a majority of the court to issue the order as in this way. But if everybody's just doing it as a sop to one of the liberal justices who's trying to make a point, well, then maybe it's not so important. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it gives me hope that this is going to be a winner for the states. And I think there's also another aspect to it that I think is worth talking about. I mean, we get bogged down in all the legal aspects of this, and there's a lot of pessimism about the Supreme Court. And I don't fault people. You know how our liberal friends are when every June the Supreme Court issues some decision that they don't like, and they say, it's the end of the world. It's the end of democracy. And, you know, they've been doing this for decades. And one of the things that's been happening, and I don't mean to be critical, is that some of these orders that the Supreme Court has been issuing over the past several months, and I think the orders are bad and they're questionable, because what they're doing is they're basically making up facts or ignoring the factual findings of district judges who actually are on the ground and are hearing evidence and are getting affidavits and sometimes even testimony. They're kind of just overruling that in a kind of a seat of a pants way, even though there are appellate doctrines that basically say you have to defer to the facts as found by the lower courts, because that's what the lower courts are trained to do. And they have the record in front of them. They have the people in front of them who are testifying. And so what I think has happened is there's just this incredible pessimism that has developed that the Supreme Court is going to rule in favor of Trump on absolutely everything. And here's my point. That pessimism, I think, has been somewhat justified. I'm not faulting people for being critical of the Supreme Court, but it may actually be helpful politically. Because at the end of the day, as you and I have both been talking, you believe this as because you are a political type. I believe this because I'm a conservative lawyer who believes that, you know, the rule of law is vital. But on the other hand, the courts can't do everything.
Right.
Okay? We are the ultimate guarantors of the rule of law. What's happened here is expectations have been lowered by the Supreme Court's screwy decisions in the past. And so if this case turns out to be a dead bang winner for the states, that's going to be a bigger blow to the government from a political standpoint than it otherwise would have been. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Hey, when you defy expectations, you know, when expectations are low and you get over them,
You know, it's a general rule of political physics, which is you want to lower expectations and then declare the biggest victory in the history of mankind.
Sure. Okay, well, we won't know until November 17th, which is when, that's only when they file their briefs. So it'll be a while before we learn anything from the Supreme Court on this particular question. But that's going to be a really important one to watch. So I'm sure we're going to talk about it again. I want to wrap by just asking you, we've had like a weird week. So I want to just talk for a minute about Trump's third term aspirations. Steve Bannon said in a recent interview with The Economist that Trump is going to be president in 28. Meaning 2028, and people just ought to get accommodated to that. Thank you, Steve Bannon. But then last week, Trump seemed to acknowledge that he can't run again. He said, based on what I read, he isn't reading the Constitution.
He reads.
I guess I'm not allowed to run, so we'll see what happens. Now, he said that like on the heels of Mike Johnson also saying when asked, no, he can't do this. And that's because the 22nd Amendment is pretty clear, saying that no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice. I mean, how are you thinking about this specter of a third term? Is Bannon trolling us? Did somebody tell Trump to knock it off? Like, because he was entertaining those conversations. He's always, every time he does it, it is a great opportunity for him to say the lie of, we have the best numbers. I have the best numbers of any president ever in the history of the world. Not true, false, you're doing terribly. But like, what do you think's going on with the third term?
Yeah,
stuff?
I think there are two or three things going on here. One is, I think he's starting to realize, and this is speculation, but I think it's informed speculation, that he's not going to make it through a third term. I think he's realizing that he's physically failing. I think it has to be. I mean, you can just see it. You can see it every day. And we had the unexplained absence from sight over what I guess was the Labor Day weekend. And we have the fact that he had to have a second annual physical at Walter Reed in the same year. And the fact that he ultimately admitted that actually was not physical. He had to go up there because he had to have, he said, he admitted he had an MRI, which makes sense because you could do everything at the White House except surgery and advanced imaging. So there's something, and you don't get an MRI just as part of a checkup. Nobody does that. It's not a screening tool as such, unless you have something that you are looking for. And so there's something going on with him, whether, you know, it could be that he had a multiple stroke, a mini stroke or some sort. I forget what the technical term is. Something is going on that has reminded him that he is mortal. And that's why you also hear him saying things, maybe I'll go to heaven. I don't know. What should I go to heaven? That kind of weird, rambling shit that he's gauging in. I mean, he's starting to reflect upon, he's not necessarily going to be here forever. And so he saw what happened to Joe Biden, who was just a little bit older than he is. And so I think he's kind of working through in his own mind that he's accepting that he would not necessarily be physically able to serve a third term. That's one thing that's going on. The second thing that's going on is that there is actually a probably or possibly valid way to get around the constitutional prohibition on two terms. And we've talked about this before. I remember I mentioned it once on MSNBC and everybody was in shock. But actually, if you read through the text of the Constitution, the relevant provisions, and I Larry Tribe agrees with me on this, you can actually, the provision restricting presidents to two terms is written not quite in the way you would think it was written. The way you would want to write it would be, you can't serve more than two terms. You can't serve more than half of somebody else's term if you serve a single term, but it's not written that way. The way it's written is no person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice, and no person who has served more than 2 years of a term somebody else was elected to can be elected more than once himself, which would be the Gerald Ford example. Ford right. ended up serving more than 2 years of President Nixon's second term, and he would not have been able to run for re-election in 1980 had he won in 1976. And what that means is you could actually pull a little stunt, which is sort of like almost reminiscent. Well, not quite reminiscent, but I think of Putin. Remember when Putin, there was a term limit in the Russian Federation Constitution. And the way he got around that was he found a puppet, Medvedev, to be president, but he was actually wielding the power behind the scenes, and he had them appoint him prime minister. Mm-hmm. Okay. That was kind of a ruse. Well, the ruse here would be Trump would run in 2028 as vice president.
Yeah.
On the ticket. And you find some shill to run at the top of the ticket, whether J.D. Vance or Lara Trump, who the hell knows?
Sure. Plenty of shills to be had.
Right. So. Plenty of shills will do this. And then you get the ticket elected, assuming you do that. And then what happens is the person elected president gets sworn in and then resigns, or just says, I disavow the office. I disclaim the office. In which case, the argument would be, well, President Trump was duly elected vice president and has to succeed to become president under the Constitution. He was not elected twice to the office of president, or three times to the office of president. He was only elected twice. So this doesn't violate. So he gets to serve the rest of this term out. And I always thought that that's the way, if you were really going to do it and try to make it legal, that's how you would do it. But the problem is, and I always thought this too, when I first floated this, Trump's not going to want to do that. And the reason why Trump's not going to want to do that is the same reason he doesn't want to do lots of things, which is because he's got too big of an ego. He doesn't want to be number two on the ticket. It's debasing to him. And that's actually what he said yesterday or the day before.
He's like, it's
too cute, because he doesn't want to play second fiddle.
Yeah.
Okay. Even as dress up, he doesn't want to play second fiddle. And so that's why he doesn't, That's why he's disavowing this theory. Now, here's the rub. This is the third point I want to make about it. Don't believe anything he says. Okay. It's like tariffs. He'll say one thing one day. He'll say the other thing the next.
Sure.
This man will try to keep a hold on power as long as he is physically able to. Okay. So, you know, if he doesn't choke on a cheeseburger, if he doesn't have some medical disorder that's being examined right now at Walter Reed by this MRI or whatever, and he does somehow, you know, he does live to be 250 years old the way that, or whatever it was that Dr. Ronnie Jackson said he would, that Trump would. Trump's not going to want to give up power under those circumstances. And the way he's going to do it is he's going to find some other way to do it that's not legal, because he doesn't believe himself to be constrained by law. And part of what's going on here is nobody wants to give up power in this administration.
Yeah.
And what they are doing is classic authoritarian takeover moves, which is militarizing the streets, creating basically brown shirt forces, and, you know, claiming that there are conspiracies afoot to overthrow us and we need to fight back and we need to do everything in our power to fight back. It's the classic way that military coups happen, where they say that somebody, these revolutionaries are about to take over the government, so we had to take over the government. And that's, you know, just because Donald Trump said he doesn't think he could serve a third term because it's too cute, this way to interpret the Constitution is too cute, doesn't mean he's not going to try to do it some other way. Or one of his minions or successors, who turns out to be just as evil as like CEG J.D. Vance, doesn't try to pull some kind of stunt himself.
Well, there you have it, folks. Breaking news. Can't trust Donald Trump. Probably can't believe what he's going to say. All right, George, thanks as always for talking about the illegal news with me. There was a lot of stuff to go over today. I appreciate you unraveling a couple complicated ones. Thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. Don't forget to hit subscribe, leave us a review, and we will see you next week.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell them well about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the Ebola mess to the Russian ties. Oh, Sarah, listen close.